Welcome to the U.S. Soccer Conference Call. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Neil Beefy. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Felicia. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. To start, I'm going to open up the floor to U.S. Soccer President Sunil Gulati. After Sunil's comments, I will let everyone know how we are going to operate today's call. Sunil, whenever you're ready.
Thanks, Neil. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for, on short notice, making yourself available and participating in the call. For us, 2010 is an extraordinary year. Most of you are familiar with a number of things that are going on, starting, obviously, with the national team's participation in the World Cup. We've seen the draw, and people are excited about that. The sort of unprecedented coverage and support that ESPN is putting behind the national team and the World Cup itself. Obviously, our bid for the 2018/2022 World Cup and a whole number of other things, another MLS season, a second season of WPS, and continuation of any number of programs. We think it's a very exciting time for the sport. And clearly, the number of people that have been able to jump on this call on short notice, which is, frankly, far higher than I anticipated, is partly a sign of that. It's also partly a sign, I think, of the interest in professional soccer. And in this case, we're going to be talking, obviously, about second division with an announcement that you've probably seen a press release about. We have, for the last couple of months, been trying to reach an agreement and reviewing two applications for Division II membership. You're familiar with the background on that. 10 days ago, or 8 days ago, I guess, the U.S. Soccer Board made a decision and essentially asked both those groups, or advised both those groups, that we wouldn't be sanctioning either one and see if we could work out a solution. In the last 7 days, we've been able to do that, and I should very much thank the two groups, and in particular, Alec Papadakis, who's on the line with us, and Jeff Cooper, and their colleagues, working along with Dan Flynn, myself, and some others, on, in a very short period of time, getting resolved a number of issues in order to make that happen. And when I say make it happen, what I'm talking about is Division II soccer in the United States. We will, next year, or the current year, sorry, be operating a 12-team league, two divisions of six teams. You've seen a press release which tells you who's playing in which division. Those will have, one will be the USL Conference, the other will be the NASL Conference. The teams are playing as independent members of a league that we're setting up. The federation will take a much more direct role than it does in other professional leagues in the United States for this year-long arrangement. We'll be involved intimately in the scheduling, in officiating we are in all the leagues, in some of the marketing issues, if there are some of those, disciplinary issues, and operational issues in terms of setting some general guidelines. We'll obviously rely quite heavily on the existing resources within the teams and within the USL structure that already exists. The NASL has some additional resources that we may rely on, but U.S. Soccer will take the lead on it. We'll have a board of directors for the league, which will consist of representatives from each of the 12 teams. We'll have an executive committee, which will consist of five people, including one representative from the U.S. Soccer. That executive committee will handle any issues that may come up that a normal board would handle for any professional league. And U.S. Soccer will be available if there are any disagreements, as in the way that a office of the commissioner would be. We're not going to be naming a commissioner or anything like that. We've also, in this period, in the 7 days, managed to reach an agreement that will effectively end the dispute that existed between the USL and certain member teams and potentially other individuals. That dispute, as a result of this agreement, is dropped. There won't be any litigation out of any of the events that have taken place to now, and we're certainly very pleased about that, both from a going-forward point of view and from an economic point of view of spending that much money. So, frankly, we're quite excited that we've been able to get this done. The last two things I'd say are really looking forward starting today. Our goal is to have a stable professional soccer environment in the U.S. I think we've been able to accomplish that with MLS over the last 14 years, and with the exception of 1 year where two teams were dropped, which frankly made the league more stable, there's been a little bit steady growth. soccer teams, in terms of interest, and so on. We want to try to make sure that we can accomplish that in all of our other professional leagues, which are a little bit different than, let's say, youth soccer or adult soccer at amateur level. So we'll, in the next few months, be laying out some regulation and rules, some standards that will put a little bit more substance into our current standards about what a second division or a third division should look like. And I don't mean specifically in terms of on-field quality of play, because that's impossible to measure other than the proxy of how much is being spent. But everyone's agreed that that's important, and we'll be working on that. For us, the most important thing here is long-term stability. And we think what we've achieved today gets us a short-term solution for this 2010 season, but we want to work with a number of people, including the gentlemen that are on the call and all of the teams that are capable of playing in the second division, to find long-term solution so we don't have teams changing back and forth between divisions unless it's part of a down-the-road promotion-relegation system, and not don't want to light up any blogs by saying that's around the corner, but who knows. But we want to have stability, and we've already done some things this year in the agreement that's been reached to do that, and we'll continue to do more of them. And with that, Neil, I think I'll stop. As I said, thank you for joining us. We're extremely excited about this agreement and certainly about 2010 overall for the sport in the U.S.
All right. Thanks, Sunil. All right, everyone. What we will do is assign questions to reporters three at a time, so everyone knows when their turn is. I do want to mention that there are a large amount of people on today's call, so we may not be able to get to everyone, but we will try our best. And at the end of the call, we may open it up for people to ask questions once again if they've already asked the question the first time. The first three questions then will be asked from Ron Blum with the Associated Press, and then it will be Bo Durr with USA Today, and then Jeffrey Arnold with the Oregonian. Ron, are you there?
I'm here.
What?
Hey, Sunil, how are you?
Good, Ron, how are you?
Good. Given the financial difficulties, both with even a first division league or having a reserve MLS league, how daunting and what are the financial issues trying to get a viable nationwide second division up and running?
Well, I think they're the same challenge that we have in any startup venture, and this is a unique sort of startup because it's a conglomeration of some teams that already exist, some expansion teams. Any startup is challenged in today's economy. We've obviously had a number of challenges in the sport over time. MLS, as I mentioned, is now very much on stable footing and has been growing. WPS did better than they had perhaps expected out of the blocks, but they started in the middle of the worst downturn in our nation's history in the last 70 years. So there are going to be some challenges. I'm not going to make any bones about that. What our goal is that the people that are going to be investing in teams and in leagues understand what those challenges are and are realistic about what it's going to take to make it work financially. And that's generally not going to mean a P&L that's in the black in the first or second year. And so if we see projections from whether it's a team or an applicant that says, listen, I understand I'm going to have some losses, but in the second year I'm going to make money, we look at that very, very rigorously and challenge those sorts of assumptions. So I think the absolutely critical notion is to have investors that understand this is a long-term plan, a long-term play, a long-term business model, and what we're seeing from the teams and the groups that are involved here, that they understand that. And we're going to take some actions that are going to guarantee that we don't have some of the sorts of issues we've had in the past. Raising the bar early helps us do that.
All right. Next up, Bo, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and I'd like to ask question for all the gentlemen on the call, I believe. What were the biggest obstacles to making a deal? What had to be overcome in the past 7 days? And what happened with Atlanta and New York that caused them not to be able to make it?
Let me start with that, and then certainly Alec and Jeff can jump in. Last 7 days, the hardest part of any situation like this is getting agreement on every point. We were trying to do that on a number of small points with 12 people plus league representatives that are scattered around the country, in some cases around the world. So trying to get agreement on every point and add to that the holiday season made it very hard. But what this would look like was important. Who would be in control of the structure was certainly pretty critical. And to be blunt, the status of certain teams who were part of an arbitration litigation, we needed to resolve that. We were able to do that. Those are not easy issues when there's dollars at stake, when there are contracts that have to be reviewed and lived up to. So I think those were the hardest things from our point of view. In terms of Atlanta and New York, we really don't want to be commenting too much on what might happen in the future. I think those are both cities that are looking towards the future and participation in a D2 league. But frankly, in the short term, we weren't of the opinion that they would be playing this year. Nowhere in this process have I believed that Atlanta would be playing this year. It had been made pretty clear to us that they'd be starting later. And very early in the process, it became clear that New York really wanted to start later if they were going to be part of the setup. And Jeff or Alec, if you'd like to add to that, feel free, please.
Yeah, that's correct. New York has requested that we delay their participation.
Obviously started a year later than they had hoped back after 1999. So we think the most important thing is to get the right number of teams. If people want to come in later, that's fine. Some of the strongest franchises, obviously, in the MLS are those that have come in later when you look at what's happened in Seattle and Toronto in particular. So we want to make this a stable situation, and there's no reason to push the boundaries on the number of teams in year one.
All right. Thanks for the question, Bo. Before we get to Jeffrey Arnold, the next questions will come from Tom Timmerman of the St. Louis Dispatch, Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun, and Nicholas Mura from the Tampa Tribune. Jeff, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, Neil.
Go ahead.
I just had one quick question, Neil, is that I didn't see I got the original release, but I didn't see a release identifying which teams are going to be in which conferences. And
sure.
I don't know if you would be willing to
Know that right now. So in the USL conference, the teams will be Austin, Minnesota, Portland, Puerto Rico, Rochester, and Tampa Bay. And then the NASL conference will consist of teams from Baltimore, Carolina, Miami, Montreal, St. Louis, and Vancouver.
Okay. A couple of questions from a logistical standpoint. How are you setting up the schedule? I mean, will these teams play each other as they've done in the past? And the other question, Phil, is that given the deep-seated issues or feelings on the, particularly for the teams that went to the NASL, can you talk a little bit about you talked about the issues that were there, but I'm assuming there's some reluctant teams or owners, and how did you get those individuals, those teams, to buy into this overall agreement?
Well, let me make very clear, because I've seen something reported earlier today, that what we've got is two leagues with possible interplayer championship game. That's not what we have. What we have is one D2 league that U.S. Soccer will operate. There's complete interplay. So from the conference point of view, all these teams will play against each other. We're not quite ready to announce a schedule yet. We think it'll be between 28 and 32, possibly up to 34 games. And there's a couple of things that we're trying to get through on available dates. So that'll come out very quickly. But everyone will play everyone. How did we get people that were reluctant? That's part of any deal. Everyone was willing to compromise in the end to make sure that they met the standards we were looking for, to make sure that we had a viable and stable Division II set up. And so you put some of those differences behind you and you get on with it, and that's essentially what happened. I could cite, you know, thousands of situations in the past where people have these sorts of disputes and they get on with it, whether it's, you know, player contracts with individual clubs or I'll never play for that team again or that coach again, all part of the deal. And you know, are we going to have any hiccups along the way? Sure, like you do in any situation. We have those in all of our leagues now when they're under one umbrella and they've been there forever. But we anticipate that everyone's going to work together and make this work. And frankly, we'll play the role of mediator but also the role of regulator in this to make sure that happens.
All right. Thank you very much. Next question, Tom Thurman. You there, Tom?
I am. Thank you, Neil. This is for Alec. From the USL side of things, what is good about this deal for your league?
Well, the most important goal that we have at this point of time is to get on and allow the USL and or to allow the Division II soccer to play in 2010. Our goal right now is to make sure that the teams have a platform and have a place to play for 2010, and then we can so that we can move forward with the USL business plan for down the road.
And does this change your business plan at all down the road?
I think, Tom, we want to really focus on this next year, and we've actually asked both groups to focus on this year. They obviously have the things that they might talk about in the future, but we're really focusing today on 2010, and we'll give them the ability to talk about their long-term plans starting next week or 20 minutes after this call.
Thank you, Sunil.
All right, Ian Walker, you're next. Are you there?
Yes, thank you. Can someone maybe describe how the talks took place and what kind of sense or atmosphere there was around these meetings?
Well, I can only speak for myself. We've tried to be very open, as has Dan Flynn, who, as U.S. Soccer CEO, has played a critical role in this. And I think that the two sides have. They've been pretty open, maybe more open when they're talking with us individually than with each other. And I don't mean about not being truthful, but, you know, we probably are a little bit more colorful when we're not talking to a group that we're trying to reach a deal with. In the last 7 days, we have talked every day, including New Year's Day morning, including New Year's Eve, had a meeting a couple of days ago. So I think everybody's been pretty honest, both about what they'd like to see happen here and what they wanted to see happen here at the start of the process. They've had to compromise pretty clearly. And I think in the process, everyone's understood the regulatory role of U.S. soccer and wanted to make sure that they fit in under the role and, frankly, put aside some of their own concerns for what might be best or what they thought was in their best short-term interest to make D2 soccer work next year. With that, I'll let either Alec or Jeff absolutely jump in. Jeff, since Alec had a chance earlier, you can comment first if you like.
Sure. I mean, I think I would obviously describe the meetings as cordial, and I think we were able to work through a lot of the issues. I mean, I think at the end of the day, the good news is we all had the same goal, which was getting on the field. And obviously, huge thanks goes out to the USSF for facilitating the entire process. It's obviously been a long process, but it's a fair resolution for USSF, for the teams, for the players, and obviously, most importantly, for the fans. So we feel good about it.
Alec?
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Right. Before we get to Nicholas Murray, sorry, Nicholas, for mispronouncing your name the first time, we have the next three call reporters will be Jeff DeVeronica from Rochester, Michelle Kaufman from the Miami Herald, and Brian Corsted from Inside Minnesota Soccer. Nicholas, you there?
Yes, I am. Not a problem, Neil. Question for all three, Dan, Alec, and Jeff. You spoke earlier about Atlanta and New York making clear that they weren't going to be ready for this season and were looking to enter for 2011. Are you guys confident that Tampa Bay will be ready to compete despite the fact that there is no clear plan for a stadium that's been made public so far?
Well, this is Sunil. And I'll, in terms of New York and Atlanta, it was less about us deciding that they weren't ready than the local ownership groups deciding in conjunction with the, with their investors that they weren't ready to go. And we weren't forcing anybody to try to get to a magic number of 8. So in those two cases, we didn't say, no, we don't think you're ready. So the first criteria has to be if the person putting up the money can run a stable organization, is willing to take on the risk associated with it, and then we're making a judgment after that. In the case of Atlanta and New York, we never had to make that judgment. In the case of Tampa, Tampa's been at this for quite a bit longer. Obviously, Tampa was announced some time ago, so I think they'll have a lot of things to say over the weeks to come. Obviously, it's January 7th, and we haven't announced a schedule yet, and until today, we didn't announce that we had a league. So I think we got to give Tampa and everyone else a little time to figure out a bunch of things as we go forward. But I think if we look around the league, we have a number of teams who already have players under contract, have coaches picked, have stadiums, obviously. So I think in the next few days, and certainly over the next few weeks, you're going to see a number of announcements coming from the teams and from U.S. Soccer.
Do you think it's important for Tampa to get those
teams that are expansion
open?
Oops, sorry.
Clearly more information from those teams that are expansion teams that haven't been playing.
Do you think it's important that Tampa get that information out there as far as putting out there to the public that they are going to be a viable team 3 months from now?
I think you'll see that happen over the weeks to come very quickly.
All right. Thank you, Nicholas.
Next up
is Jeff D. Veronica. Jeff, you there?
Couple quick ones. Do we have a name of this league yet, or is that, again, to be determined in the next few days?
For right now, we're referring to it as USSF D2, but based on this call, if we get a corporate partner that wants to partner with us for a year, we'd be happy to rename it.
Okay.
I think it'll be called USSF D2 or Division 2, but in the next few days, if we come up with a I guess it's important, we're not trying to come up with a brand that is going to be around for very long, so that's actually less critical to us. What we're looking for is an umbrella organization, so we're not trying to come up with NBA or NFL or Premier League or anything like that. It's a holding situation to allow us to have a league this year and to get things stabilized.
Second question is, do you foresee U.S. soccer staying as an active, having such an active role beyond 2011? And do you foresee any sort of partnership between the second division, what it is now, what it will become, and Major League Soccer in regard to farm teams, similar to a baseball structure?
I think all on the first part, the answer is no. I don't see U.S. Soccer continuing to be involved at the level we're going to be this year. We're all involved in all of our professional leagues up to a point. Most clearly in the regulatory area and in the case of officials and referees. So we're involved everywhere. I don't see us going beyond those and maybe a couple other roles with Division II or anyone else beyond this year. We've had discussions with MLS. Some of the teams, some of the leadership of the groups we've been talking about and have been sitting at a table have had their own independent discussions prior to all these processes starting with MLS about working together, about potentially partnering, about having MLS handle some of the functions, about developmental relationships. There was a long-standing relationship early on between MLS and the USL on player development and players moving up and down. So I think all of that is possible. And we certainly encouraged everyone to try to do things in a very efficient way financially. And if there are economies to be had or a player development scheme that makes sense, then terrific. You've already seen some of that integration happen where you've got teams, for example, that play in the U.S. Development Academy, the USSF Development Academy, that have affiliations either directly or owned by a second division team or an MLS team or sponsored by one of those teams. So I think as we continue to develop this model and look for further stability, you're going to see natural synergies come into place that make sense financially to try to get everyone on sound footing, both on the field and off the field.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Next up is Michelle Kaufman. Michelle, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Hope you guys are doing well. Happy New Year. I just have a couple of quick questions, which is when will the season be played, what months, and will there be a break for the World Cup?
Always a tough question, Michelle. The answer is I think the season would start roughly when D2 seasons have started in the past, so we're probably looking at late March to mid-April. I can't specify an exact date because we're still trying to work out the schedule. And with a championship game that would follow similar sort of patterns to that it has in the past. So you're looking at October, November. There's some unanswered questions about Open Cup dates and so on, so we can't specify all that. And as I said, until yesterday, we weren't quite sure on how many teams we were going to have. At this time, I don't see a complete break during the World Cup, but I think there's a possibility that the schedule will be lighter during the World Cup in a way that MLS has done. So I don't think there's certainly not going to be a 5-week break during the World Cup, or a 31-day break. But I think, you know, especially in the first round of the tournament when there are 48 games in South Africa, the schedule might be a little bit lighter. But frankly, that's not something we've had a chance to sit down and discuss with the 12 teams and the board.
Okay. Can I ask one follow-up?
Sure.
You said earlier that, you know, as the year goes on, you want to – this is just sort of to stabilize short-term solution, and you want to raise the bar early and make sure that this is a league that can be – you know, that these are teams that can be viable later. And are there specific quantitative things that you're going to look for from each of the teams, something that they each have to demonstrate to be able to go on in the future after this season?
Yes. We've got some quantitative and very specific targets in our regulations, and we intend to put in more of those, whether they apply to financial stability, whether they apply to what staffing levels look like, and so on. So to give you an example, our regulations have minimum standards on size of stadiums, full-time operation for PR director and a CEO, and so on and so forth. Mm. We think we need to put some more meat behind those in order to make sure that the teams that are part of a Division II, or Division I for that matter, meet a certain standard, and most importantly, can meet that standard year in and year out and improve. We can't have this constant issue that bedevils a number of sports, that the off season is spent primarily trying to make sure that you can come back the following season.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for expansion teams, not because it makes long-term sense to build the game and the league, but because you need an expansion fee. You know, we had that issue 25 years ago in our league, and we want to make sure we're able to avoid that so that expansion is done in a systematic way. And we're not going to be, the U.S. Soccer is not going to be one deciding that, but if people coming in the door that are part of a Division II understand that this is a long-term play and that there's going to be some significant investments early on, and aren't counting on expansion proceeds in a year or two to try to reduce capital calls, and these are capital calls in early years for everyone,
mm-hmm.
We think that's absolutely important. And the philosophy we've discussed with the leaders of these teams seems to be in line with that. People understand that for us, the most important thing is stability. Growth is right after that, but you can't have growth unless you've got stability.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. All right, the next reporter with a question will be Brian Korstad. And then after Brian, we will probably open it up for questions. So, Brian, your time to ask questions is now.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank Sunil and Dan Flynn for from all the supporters of former USL 1 team to get this.
Hey, Brian, we're losing you.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yeah.
Okay, sorry. I was just thanking Sunil and Dan Flynn for getting this thing done, for all the supporters of Second Division Soccer Team. It's very much appreciated. I have a question for Sunil in that you said you were kind of surprised by the amount of people that have actually gotten on this conference call. You know, this whole story has been picking up steam as it's gone along, and even though it may not have been the most positive way to get it done, I'm just wondering if you're surprised by the amount of attention that second division soccer has gotten in the U.S., even though maybe those attendance numbers are not always real high with all those teams. It does seem to have picked up a lot of attention.
No, I'm less surprised about that. So the overall interest, because, you know, we've had teams in many important markets in the U.S. for a number of years. We've had lots of players that have, you know, that are currently playing in our national team that have come and played at various parts of their career in a number of the teams we're talking about, and obviously also in the case of the Canadian national team. So the interest in it is not so surprising. The fact that it's continued to build is obviously a plus, and I think that's partly a reflection of where the sport is and that the sport is getting better. You know, when we get the sort of interest we do on player transfers for national team players, that interest is higher. The interest we had, obviously, over the summer for the Confederations Cup was higher. So part of it is the rising tide, I think, for the sport. part of it is that there's been a little bit of negativity, and that always seems to pick up some news. But, you know, we've been able to push through that. So I'm pleased that we've had this level of interest. We joked about it before we came on the call with Jeff and Alec that said we prefer not to get the level of interest heightened with this sort of last 2 weeks every year, and we're not going to do that. But, you know, frankly, the number of people that we've got on the call in a very short period of time, which is well over 100, is a very positive note to us, and we're pleased with that.
All right. Thanks, Brian. We'll actually have one more question before we open up to the queue. That question's going to come from Mike Blake of the Cary News. And then, Felicia, can you take this time to let everyone know how to get in the queue if they want to ask a question? And we'll probably have time for one or two more questions after Mike's.
Sure. If you would like to ask a question, please press 01.
All right. And, Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Right, go ahead.
Yeah, this question goes to Sunil. Just what were the kind of ramifications that you saw with this, the whole movement of trying to break away from the USL early on, and then how the ramifications maybe changed over time? Was the situation getting much more worse as it went along, or just kind of talk about that?
Ramifications, I mean, they were, you know, listen, there was a difference in some structural questions. Certain teams which had been having discussions with in the USL for a number of years continued to have those discussions. At some point decided they would like to approach things differently, and there was a dispute about it. We got through that. So, you know, in the end, everyone wanted to have a Division II team or a Division II league. I think we've accomplished that. And some of those discussions, I'm sure, will continue to take place amongst the members, amongst the people that are on the call. But what we were absolutely desperate to do, and we got done, was make sure that we had a Division II in place for the start of this season, in a World Cup year, in a situation where the sport is building. It'd be crazy not to be able to get that done. And I think Jeff and Alec and their groups and their individual teams realized that. There was a lot of impetus to try to get it done, and it was just a question of how we got it done and what sort of structure we could get it done with. So, you know, it was obviously there was some negativity. I don't use words like breakaway leagues or anything else. We've gotten a solution for the year, and beyond that, we'll see how it goes. But it's a pretty good solution, we think, for 2010.
All right. The next question will come from Simon Evans. Simon, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yeah. Got one very specific question, Sunil, and then a general one. Just in terms of television, are you in negotiations? Is there anything left over from the Fox deal with USL that's valid for this league, or are we starting afresh with that? And the second part is, in general, what do you see the main purpose of a second-tier league being in the United States overall? I mean, without promotion there, is it primarily about generating youth football, young players for the future, or is it primarily about filling gaps in a market where the major league isn't there?
All of the above on the latter part. I think that really comes down to a philosophy of the individual teams. We've had that sort of discussion for many years, and, you know, if I used examples of when MLS started, over the next few years, you know, you had a group in Rochester, for example, that was operating at one level, and you had some other teams that were operating at a different level with a different philosophy. So I think there'll continue to be some of those sorts of issues within leagues. That exists all over the world. There aren't, you know, I guess there are four teams in the Premier League that every year believe they're going to potentially finish at the top, and some that are just trying to stay up, and plenty of teams around the world that are in the player development game when other teams are trying to get into the Champions League or the Libertadores or whatever. So I think you can have a mix of that. And if you look at the teams that are part of this, you've already seen that. Vancouver, which has had a great setup for a number of years and is a new team that will be part of MLS. It's also had a very viable youth program, and Greg Kerfoot and his group have also had a terrific women's program. On the other side of things, we could look at similar sorts of examples in the U.S. For some of the other teams. So I think it's going to be a mix of those things. the U.S. is 320 million people. Add a big, another big group from Canada. MLS is in 15 markets, with obviously two in Los Angeles and one in Toronto. So there are a lot of very big American cities and a number of large Canadian cities that could certainly boost a viable Division II setup. And so I think it's being able to do that in some of those markets. And whatever cooperative agreement that be between MLS and the D2 league and a D3 league is really up to the participants. In the absence of a promotion or relegation system, it's pretty hard to pinpoint an exact answer to that question.
Okay. And on television?
On television, there's already been discussions that have been taking place. There were discussions that had taken place between the USL and I'm going to not specify which potential TV partner. There are some marketing companies that are available to help. So I think there will be some very quick discussions that'll, you know, again, it's pretty hard to have those discussions in seriousness until you know whether you're going to have a league and how many teams are going to be playing in it, what time zones they're going to be in, what a schedule looks like, and whether you're going to be in one country or two. All of that will be known very quickly, all with the exception of the schedule are known now. So I think there'll be a very serious and quick set of discussions with at least one partner, and that's already started, and potentially another about a game of the week or a game of the month or whatever it might be, and I don't want to speculate on that yet.
Thanks very much indeed. Thank you.
Thanks, Simon. The last two questions will come from Jim Morris from the Canadian Press and then Andrea Canales from Goal.com. Jim, are you there?
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Is there any kind of, maybe it might be a misnomer, is there any kind of a fee? Do these teams have to pay any kind of a fee to belong to the league right now?
The answer is they're going to have to pay a fee and a bond to U.S. Soccer, since we're going to be the umbrella on this. There is a already, and actually to the CSA, to the Canadian Soccer Association, there is a regular set of fees and dues that are payable by all of our members, whether it's a youth player or a professional team. It's obviously escalated for the higher up the spectrum you are. So there's a couple of different payments that are made. Team payments, there's some player registration payments, and in this case, there'll also be a bond that'll be paid by all teams. An unused portion of that would be returned. The bond would also be used against certain expenditures that U.S. Soccer will take on this year that it wouldn't in a normal situation. So if, for example, we're going to hire someone or hire a third party, do X, Y, or Z, or do that internally on a cost basis, the teams, the 12 teams, would be paying that cost, and that would come out of those fees. So that structure is actually quite well outlined already, even without much of a need to discuss it further.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. And the last question of the call will come from Andrea. Andrea, are you there?
Yeah, Sunil. In the past, MLS has had a Project 40 team, like in USL, and worked closely with USL on other points. Obviously, the MLS ran its own reserve league for a while, but dissolved that a couple of years ago. Are there any plans to, now that the U.S. Soccer Federation is in charge of the second division league, to integrate some sort of reserve league element that works with MLS or anything like that?
The answer is in the short term, no, Andrea, because this is a 2010 situation. I think long term, you're going to see things happen, whether it's between youth structures and our professional teams, between the professional leagues themselves, as has happened in the past. And those will be reacting to the changing landscape. So to use an example, when the Federation introduced the Development Academy, that obviously had some ripples throughout the system, whether it was for the PDL, whether it was for players that were participating in other leagues or anything else. MLS teams started then to field their own Development Academy teams. We'll see some cooperation that makes a lot of sense. We had the P40 team play in the past. You're absolutely right. MLS right now doesn't have reserve teams. So is there going to be a model where a D2 or a D3 has a direct relationship, a la the baseball model? Then sure, that's quite possible. Obviously, in the baseball model, where the teams essentially are paying the contracts of players that are playing in AAA or AA baseball is a little bit different. But all of that is possible, I think, and it's really up to the participants, and the most critical participants in this will be the investors in these teams. We are happy to play a continuing role given our mandate and our charge, and are critically interested in player development. On that last notion, I should mention this because it was an interesting discussion we had with the teams. There'll be a developmental element to this D2 structure and going forward. And what I mean by that is a number of countries around the world have situations where teams agree, or if an FA mandates that they're going to have X number of young players on their rosters. And without us needing to say we're going to mandate that, we've had a great reaction from the leadership of the two leagues. So we think we will have some of that in the future, especially for our developmental model. So in D2 and D3, we may have a rule that says you need to have 4 under-23 players or 3 under-27 players or whatever it might be. But in the principle of it, the leagues or the teams have agreed to, and we think that's it's a huge step and a positive.
All right. Well, thank you to all the reporters on the call today, and especially thank you to Sunil, Dan, Jeff, and Alec. Later today on USSoccer.com, we will have a full transcript of the call. So if everyone wants to check that out, that will be available in the next few hours. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today.